know, it's important, right off the top of my head. Gentlemen, I won't undertake to do the recommendation, but it might be somewhat painful exercise early in the day. Really, the purpose of bringing this up at this point is that when I got up there on Sunday evening, Sunday in Park, Colorado, the delegates had just gathered. They were brought together in a large hall at the YMCA camp in Park. There had been an undercurrent all day of questioning whether anybody cared, anybody was listening, even when anybody was paying attention in what they call the power structure. And whether this was just a kind of a window-dressing exercise. And so I took the occasion of being presented for a brief remark to say that we were listening, that they were being brought together in the representative group of young people from all over the United States, together with half that number of adults, to deal with serious problems. And that while it was inevitable that we would disagree with many of their recommendations, that nonetheless we would look at them carefully. We would make up our minds about ones we agreed with, ones we would qualify, and ones we disagreed with, and that we would create some mechanism for specific review and for some kind of subsequent communication with them as to what we had done or not done and why. And so the real purpose of bringing this up this morning is simply to say that it's really important for a number of reasons, if only because I think that's the appropriate suggestion to make in certain things, that I will be working with Steve Hess next week or two to develop a specific mechanism for doing this. Several suggestions have been made, such as, for example, that arrangements might be made for a small group of the most knowledgeable delegates in a specific field of governmental responsibility to call on the cabinet officer or agency head responsible for that field of activity. Rogers Morton is there. Certainly one of the great interests of a lot of the delegates is in the field of the environment. A group of the delegates who served on that task force, for example, might visit with him, and we could tell him in effect what process he proposed to use to consider their recommendations and what. This is, I think, the kind of approach we've taken in other situations which seem to call for a more specific consideration of the concerns of the group. When we're doing the case of Black Caucus recommendations, which are getting consideration point by point with a view to our being able to tell them where we come out. And I think with the youthful delegates of this conference, most especially, that there is a lot to be gained simply by demonstrating to them that we have looked withdrawal of all U.S. troops from Indochina by December 31, 1971. They called for the Appalachian Commission to take over coal mining in Appalachia and for an end to strip mining. They called for devoting one quarter of the federal budget to education. They called for a guaranteed annual income of $6,500 for amnesty to draft violators and draft and deserters. Other kids, the governor's
that's fine.
You got the name for the company. Oh, yes, they know. Their background or process by which to donate their water. And of course, as far as activism is concerned, the adults were there in a sort of expert or quasi-expert capacity, and I think it's natural enough that those individuals reflected their own specific interests in the task force, forces in which they served. But the voting was by secret ballot, and there was, by the vote breakdowns I've seen, not much difference.
Very important for us to, because we're out here in the White House staff, my staff.
also it's very important to see some of these others, and it starts to see the constant. Every time they come in, there's always somebody in my schedule to see that group big square. Well, I got you to see a few square people too. There are some they're not bad. Sometimes they may come from Nebraska or Kansas or maybe Texas. I had a group here from Ohio the other day, and boy, American flags to my great surprise. I thought they were going to burst. Quite as if all of this is important to know what people, what you were thinking. Those that were there, I would say those that were there think this way. And I think you, I think on the other hand, a great number of your recommendation would also be representative of other youth. But I would be very cautious in any kind of a group to say, well, that's it. Well, for example, I had a group in here talking about the UN yesterday. You just can't say, well, that's it. This is Cabot Lodge, you know, bipartisan group, Republicans, Democrats, and so forth. Fulbright was in it, Bob Kemp was in it, a lot of others, a lot of recommendations. Some I agree with, some I don't, you know, with the U.S. This one. One they didn't have it, in fact, they should have had it, was this to put the U.S. on the road. Let others have the luxury of having the UN sessions. I mean, they should have one now and then in, say, London, and perhaps one that the UN might enjoy going to Nigeria, places like that. A serious proposition. I mean, but it's these two things. That's just small, just an aside. That's a way-out idea, too. It wasn't in there because it was probably too way-out. What I simply say is that I think all of you, all members of the cabinet, are to be confident. Do see, as I know you do day after day, people who come in, various people. All you've got to listen to people who listen to people who are present. I would urge all in the study of youth, and I have I studied a little. Read this. Read articles and disagree with some of these propositions. Read polls in depth that have been taken of youth attitudes. Don't get the impression that the kid that comes in with the crew cut and reads through the digest is concerned with the kids. Don't get the impression that the guys are down there that raised hell in the Senate gallery through red paint. Barry Goldwater's door, if they're representing the parent, he'd be when two delegates came up on the stage and after a bit of back and forth, really took over the microphone, and they put it to the delegates to vote on the election of a follow-through committee from the whole body of delegates from each task force and so on. See, that went very well, but the best part of it was that they were resoundingly voted down. And when they voted down, they tried to keep on talking, and there was a loud chorus of sit down. And the proceedings resumed this. It was one of those tense situations which are inherently difficult to handle in a large hall full of 1,500 people. And but it did very well. Of course, the problem is then, later that same night, and the snow quite heavily. There was more snow in the several days following when S.D. Clark had had years ahead of him for 1,200 pairs of army boots. Shut up.
Oh, I'm the military day. Once again.
Subtly folded into the problems
simply including them in other groupings without even mentioning the fact that they're there as youth representatives.
What would make a difference on the UN Commission? Have you represented on it?
By sex and race was, and by educational level.
they sort of want to discuss the solutions, but we were 2 hours getting solutions. Just reviewing the problem.
They passed a resolution condemning the problem-solution approach.
Yeah.
Assistant Dean used to be 40 years old, 42 years old, you know, so it's still about jobs for kids. We got our supporting cast now.
It's a very fine job. Also, I would suggest this to you, see this. Maybe we'll follow on any of you. If you were 20 minutes of the time of any member of the cabinet, and I just come in and talk to them, so we can arrange that up. Members of the cabinet that have, you know, areas where it's worth. He's pretty cool, especially having lived with this song. Can we get a medal?
Mr. President, Vice President, gentlemen, the President has asked us to give you a brief run-through this morning of what the situation is at the present time in the labor market, the unemployment pictures. I have with me Assistant Secretary Lovell of our NAFAR organization.
Ratio has climbed to at least 3.5
this figure would be 40-50%. So this is a real concentrated, persistent error. It's not just a phenomenon of the current economic turndown, although it's exaggerated by that. Now this is comparing the non-whites with the average rates of unemployment through time. The non-white, I should explain, consists of all racial groups, but in so doing does not identify or include the Chicano or Mexican American group. What this does
year, we passed the modified unemployment insurance law, which brings in 13 weeks of extra benefits. Under the present law, states have to approve it too. 18 states have, about 60% of the workers are not covered with extended benefits. This shows a review of our three basic categories in terms of placement services. This deals only with the placement workers and the employment service. 30% of the placements go to youth, 35 to other than white, and 21 to veterans. I think it's interesting here to note that although 13% of the population and 21% of the applicants are other than white, the 35% of the placements made by the employment service, and 21% of the applicants are veterans, and we probably need to improve our performance in that regard. These are the manpower programs, the training and work experience programs. And notice too that 48% of the manpower programs deal with youth, 54 with other than white, and 16% with veterans. Now I think it's important to note here that because of the GI Bill of Rights, and because we operate under legislation, the EOA and the MDTA, which gives a favorable treatment to disadvantaged people, that we have not done as much for the veterans as we might. In terms of the services to the median placements from the employment service, 502,000 people served by our various manpower programs in fiscal 70, represents 48% of our total activity in that regard. This does not include the summer program, which has been increased to 514,000 people from $230 million this year to serve you in the summer. Now we also have the federal summer program hiring federal employees at 70,000. We hope to place 212,000 through the employment service, and the National Alliance of Businessmen in place to hire 150,000. We will probably get this summer 900,000 youth, and we expect about 2.5 million to be in the labor market. Service to non-whites, as I mentioned, the placement rate is 35%. This employment service activity, the manpower program serving 54% of the people served are non-white, 571,000. Now the jobs program, this includes about 60,000 people that we pay for in the contract program, and the rest of what we call freebies. The industry does it at no cost to the government, and 78% of this 227,000 people that are currently being served by that program are non-white. Over 500,000 people have been served by this program over the last 3 years. Now we have some special initiatives that the Department of Labor has taken in serving non-whites, particularly in the construction field. The Philadelphia Plan and the Hometown Solutions, in which each area is discouraged to come up with their own goals and timetables for bringing minorities into the construction industry, both the apprentice program and the construction industry. We have changed our apprentice regulations requiring goals and timetables be established for the recruiting of people into the apprenticeship programs in all trades. Construction. On services to veterans, we have placed 816,000 in calendar year 1970. Manpower programs served only 88,000, because it's fairly low figure. And there are over 1 million people in training under the GI Bill of Rights. About two-thirds of that are junior college, and graduate school, and the Western Technical School, and other special programs. Now the other initiatives for veterans has been the establishment of Jobs for Veterans program, which Jim Oates heads, which is primarily an effort to publicize all through the country the need to hire veterans and the recruiting of business and labor people in cities all over the country to help in this regard. Our unemployment compensation program for veterans has 351,000 people receiving benefits, new beneficiaries, and I think as you mentioned $85,000 exhausted their benefits. We have a program in the Labor Department that guarantees veterans their rights to their old job. And these are cases that where individuals are complaining they have not received proper treatment and adjudicated. Our project transition of the Defense Department, which trains people on terminal leave while they're still being paid by the services, has been one of the most successful programs. We plan to train 30,000 to 24,000 men. We plan to expand 30 and perhaps up to 60. Our services assigned as engineers, as Secretary House pointed out, is fairly recent. The problem is been quite severe for this group, although the actual weight is relatively low, the growth in that component is very, very high indeed. We have established a national registry of scientists and engineers in Sacramento. We have several thousand that have been, names that have been listed. It's a little early to tell how successful it is, but it's a major effort. We have worked with the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics and held over 40 job counseling workshops serving about 9,000 people all over the country to help training them in how to look for the job. These are people who are not accustomed to looking for work. So we've done a lot of counseling in that area. We have had a number of special initiatives. We have a $5 million program in Southern California, which is on-the-job training and institutional training. And we've recently launched a $42 million program, which involves money for a job search, $500. We go look for a job that has been identified, a relocation allowance for $1,200. And various kinds of training, particularly on the job training, where a company is paid for the loss for the time of training an individual or the lack of productivity in the first 6 months. And then we're also putting $2 million in conversion studies to find out how skills of various engineers and scientists could be reconverted to other uses. Now, the apprenticeship program, just very briefly, has grown from 137,000 to 200,000, from 68 to 31. The number of minorities have increased from 6 to 9, although this does include Chicanos and the national rate is 15%, so there's going to be continued pressure to increase the number of minorities in the apprenticeship programs. In the construction trades, the apprentice program has almost doubled. It's gone from 78,000 to 113,000, from 68 to 71, and the percentage of minorities increased from 7 to 10. Now, these are some of the regular manpower programs that are in support of apprenticeship. And as you see, the number of trainees has increased. The involvement of minorities is particularly high and is growing slightly. And the percentage of veterans in these programs is increasing. These are the kinds of efforts, outreach, for example, to go out and bring people into apprenticeship programs, particularly minorities, give pre-apprentice training and journeyman training in areas where minorities are brought into apprenticeship programs at the journeyman level. Now, this chart shows the funds that have been going into Manpower programs since 1969. You can see the administration has certainly supported Manpower programs very actively, going from about $1 billion in 1969 to $1.9 billion in 1972, and this $3.4 billion would reflect the welfare reform program, which would have a manpower component of about $1.2 billion. So I think it's very clear that the commitment of the administration to working with these problems of youth, minorities, and veterans in terms of manpower is very significant.
Well, just to conclude the presentation, we wanted to point out that the Manpower Administration in the Labor Department is not in the business, except in a very minor way, of what you might call creating jobs. Our two roles are to ease and speed the job finding process and to make people employed. And it's in the area of aggregate. various different geographical pockets, particularly on places like the West Coast, Cape Kennedy, Huntsville, the areas in Long Island and Route 28 and around the Boston area, all have tremendous problems of unemployment. Seattle is certainly the most conspicuous example of all. And we are giving what you might even call exaggerated emphasis in the allocation of resources to these particular areas. That's it,
Mr. President.
Sure, sure.
Do you have any data on the rural areas? I just excluded those from the data.
The total employment, the general employment picture, is includes rural areas. But we have no specific data. They do not constitute a problem area as such. In fact, they would be about average and on the overall. You get into places like Appalachia, it'll be very high. Into the Rocky Mountain area, quite low. What is the statement about the California?
Impact, so that many people, 20 million people.
Well, we used to say when I was in the aerospace business that
system, why do they have that low number on the fund?
Good question. I thought in Dallas, in 1969, I'll take 69, 68, Dallas had about a point, 0.5.
Very high.
It's now up to about 3 or 3.5%.
That was still very low.
But nevertheless, that difference is reflected in the cutback in the aerospace industry. Houston is
a market diversified.
Yes, industry, yes, both places.
Yes,
Charleston.
Dallas,
that's California.
California.
Well, Dallas is very much like California's present. They're tied pretty much to the electronics, aerospace, airframe industry with the General Dynamics, LTV, college radio, Texas Instruments, and so on.
Well, you had labor branches that had to more of it was more worth it than Dallas.
That's right.
It is,
but this is economy, a much better diversity.
I think one of the real economic triumphs is what's happened down there in Houston, though, with all that big space cutback and everything else, and that's still the tightest labor market in the United States.
Yes, it still is, Dan.
Oh, yes, sir. It's,
Well, George, what is it? What kind of training do you have? Is why is Houston so different from Los Angeles?
Los Angeles and Orange County compared to the great industrial complexes.
Houston, I don't know the answer, but except Houston's on boom, Los Angeles had its boom. I'd say 20 years ago, immediately after the war, Houston's entering the phase that I just Los Angeles was in 20 years ago.
Houston doesn't have any of the tenants coming after now. You say,
oh,
I'm trying to say that.
So I don't know about that, but they got massive.
But that's, but that's
all part
of it. Unfortunately, it's much
more to their work.
That's called,
what do they do?
It's a heavy industry line.
Yeah, that's
something else.
But how everybody's in the industry.
Where do you live?
Well,
is it oil?
Your
third largest port in the country.
Third largest port in the United States.
I think
the pilot is over. Let me ask though, is this part of the problem? Is it the end of the population influx? Is it the fact that just too many people went to California, you know, and then...
Well, I think it's more the fact of what the Secretary said.
It's quite the boom
market of labor.
They pressed it out in Los Angeles in the early 60s.
Yeah.
And this thing is slacking in Los Angeles actually started before the defense cutbacks. That started about 67, 69 unemployment increase.
Yes.
It started actually gradually going on. Even at that point, so there was some softness there. That vigor and trust that goes with the building phase that a city like Houston is right in the middle of now, that crested out in the early 60s in Los Angeles.
Well, the interesting thing is, too, that the Midwest is generally fairly good.
It's pretty good.
Illinois, I mean, Chicago, Ohio.
Ohio's excellent.
Indiana.
Well, especially
Edwardsburg.
Southern Ohio.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania.
Well,
Pennsylvania is fine.
But
overall,
the rate is around 4.5 or 4.
It's around 5 minutes.
Less than the average.
But less than the average.
Is it true where light construction is a big part of the action that the employment situation is bad?
It certainly was true last year.
Yeah.
This year it's starting to pick up because
old buildings
have to go off
on
right.
Basically because of the tremendous influx of people and then other than the amount of light construction backlog.
But there again, that's the thing that started falling off on about 1966, 67. briefing today is the culmination.
We must have met 10 times.
That's the first time I've been pulled together like that. Labor Day out there.
Excellent job. Mr. President, I suggest that you go forward to the Washington and come to the station that Jim really do some work on,
where he puts
on a presentation with respect to
the job multiplier.
So the right now the counter, talk about, you know,
jobs are involved.
Tremendous
effort to say this, I think,
right.
Be
this,
well,
of course, one of the reasons why the Washington Science is not held recently for supporting many of our goals, but one of the reasons is, I mean, there is much dust in the environment as many other people I know. But anyway, but they came all out for the SST.
Situation and find that the major unemployment problem in the country is the West, the situation with regard to the policies next week.
Yes, sir.
Department's week, is it? Or is it this week?
Well, start continuing.
I think they're visiting only the residents of the Secretary of Defense this week.
No, they have Terry. Well, in service on for today, they have Attorney General's place of business on a little later in the week. That, of course, refers to the rolling demonstration that we're going to have over a period of the next week or 10 days. The largest problem that we foresee is Monday and Tuesday of next week, where they threaten to accomplish one of two things, either by blocking 21 important bridges and intersections to bring the government to a stop, or else force the government to overreact. What we see in the handouts and so on are very plain as to what they do intend, and I think it's information that each one of you. It involves basically simply putting 700 or 800 people in a key intersection and having them lie down and passively resist arrest and so on. The chief of police here is a very talented and common sense individual who feels that with the resources that he has available, he can handle this problem and keep the traffic flowing with a minimum of dislocation, which is not to say that there may not be some dislocation, but at 7 a.m. on Monday morning, he's going to be ready, willing, and able. Rather than to declare martial law or call out the troops or string barbed wire or anything of that kind, the feeling is that we ought to go along with Chief Wilson's testament of the situation and let him handle things in the ordinary police way on Monday morning. Then if it appears to be something that overtaxes the resources of the Washington police, we have to move into some other measures. But preparations will be made for that kind of an eventuality. It should become necessary, but the feeling is that pretty much the consensus around the government of those that are knowledgeable of these kind of things is that we ought to simply not comment on this. We ought not to speculate that this is going to be a particular problem. The press is going to be looking for some sort of angle to play, that the government is all upset, is wringing its hands, is putting mattresses in its halls, having its people sleep in, and this kind of thing. And I think that a calm, deliberate, sort of a steady course is obviously the one to pursue. Taking positions as a police matter, people obstruct the streets, why obviously the police would be expected to assist in clearing the streets, but beyond that, there are no special responses.
I would only add one thing. The veterans constitute a special problem last week, and we tried to handle that problem in a way that the impression still lives with most of our members. The both the sponsors, General McCarthy, to this. administration.
Carrying 50 flags off of the Washington Monument, burning them, and you have a lot of cost. That just gets
So, we come down this time. You're dealing here with tough, hardcore radicals. Now, these tough, hardcore radicals are going to try to get a confrontation. They will, of course, try to put it in terms of dialogue. And incidentally, if you have the international position, you should try to conduct a dialogue if you think that'll cool it. That's kind of good. But you want to agree with the character. No public disturbance made of that. I mean, concern about it. Made no public statements. Nobody should make a public statement at all about it. Because they want that testimony. But it is very important in terms of each department that in the case of these, of the wall, not the island, that we not take a permissive attitude. By that, by a permissive attitude, I mean an attitude which allows them to go beyond. But any reasonable person would think peaceful or so-called the kind of peaceful demonstration in the state would be allowed. Now, that's a matter of judgment in the case. In the technical violation of the law, suppose they gang up the halls and yell at the senators and arrest them. Maybe that's no company. If on the other hand, they come in and start bringing up the mimeograph machines, then that's a problem. And they should be arrested. So yes, and what's for maybe. Let's be sure that we don't have any of this incident. Now, an example of where I think the line is drawn. I'm going to show you how this called it yesterday in the Senate. You cannot discover this in the New York Times, and you will not get the full story in the Washington Post. Yesterday, here, the wire copies of what happened yesterday. I got it from some law and a couple of senators. Everybody knew this was going to happen. They went to the Senate gallery, as they had a right to do. They began to shout to try to keep the Senate from conducting its business, which they had no right to do. At that point, Senator Humphrey was in the chair. Senator Cowher got up and asked the gallery to be cleared, which is the standard procedure if there's any disturbance of the ballot. You always clear all the galleries. Senator Humphrey said, no, only those who are demonstrating are not conducting themselves properly. Then he set his darkness loose again, and there were shouters from all four corners of the Senate. Now, there's apparently a pretty long building. Cowher again asked the galleries to be cleared, and they're not free again, made the same ruling. At that point, he found it necessary to leave the chair for some reason, and he asked Senator Buckley to get the chair. So generally throughout the gallery, and Senator Byrd of West Virginia, the Democratic Whip, got up and asked that the gallery to be cleared. Senator Buckley ordered that the gallery to be cleared. Senator Humphrey then got back into the Senate and asked that the reporter be rescinded, suggesting that only those that remain deserve to be cleared. Senator Byrd objected. The gallery should be cleared, so the ruling was made that the gallery should be cleared, and then those participating or had not participated and did not intend to participate in continued disruption would be allowed to be entered. That was the ruling that was made. It was a tough one,
Didn't it go to a vote, Mr. Mayor?
But
didn't they appeal a ruling? It went to a vote of the Senate.
Probably. But my point is, it was a real tough ruling for the whole, which shows you trying to decision again. But the main point is that don't give them the opportunity for confrontation. On the other hand, remember we are not dealing this week with peaceful demonstrators. We are not dealing this week with veterans. We are dealing this week
police and park police level rather than at any higher level, at least some.
We're not mobilizing defense force. I ask you a question.
The National Guard would be in training.
The police that are reactive to the destruction of the benches, burning of the seats of the benches, there was a picture in the Star of a whole line of benches where they tore the seats up and burned them.
I don't know the kind of thing they ought to be arrested for.
There's that, and there's never
going to go 50 degrees.
Yeah, you have to be a little careful about that. You know, they put bricks in the street. I've got some big windows in my house, and they throw bricks through them. About a week ago they went through, and of course yesterday they were out there with the hoses and every other thing.
I think they really want to be arrested.
Well, why not arrest them?
Well, it's up to the Maryland police to arrest them. I can't arrest them.
I know they want to be arrested, but Mr. President, I don't think that's any reason for not arresting them. I think if you destroy these tanneries that are to commit the criminal actions, and we can put them in the jails and get them off the streets, it's going to make a difference.
Well, if you keep long-point networks away from the homes, I can understand why they can cover public buildings and so forth. But this idea that they set out to my house every time that it goes on the four television nets, and they have 35 to 40 newspaper men there, and they let them know in advance, and they do it every week. And
that first only made a 15-second mention of the Senate disturbance.
I feel that a public building is a little different proposition, but when you ask why the Maryland police don't do anything about it, that's pretty up to them. It's up to the Montgomery County Police, not to us, to do that.
Mr. President, now you can answer the Vice President's question. I would like to answer the Vice President's question this way. When they were burning park benches, there were 15,000 people out there, and they were out of there. Started arresting them again, that 15,000 folks. They're going to be uptown here breaking the windows and the banks and the rest of them. That's why they're down there in Potomac Park.
That's been a good one.
So it would take 50 police men and cordon off that place there. That's one end of the bridge where you use three of them, 50 on the other side, you've got them all contained.
Yeah. I spent a couple of hours spreading up on the hill yesterday and saw these people, but they're like silly kids. They don't even know what they're doing. They're just looking around for that television camera to catch them in that confrontation, and we can leave them alone. That's the last thing they want, is to be left alone.
Yeah. Well, let me point out that you've got all the hardcore radicals in the country and town. Maurice Davis is all the way on and down. And if they can find any way to tear up this place, they're going to do it.
Treasury,
know their itinerary. Turn red,
Secretary.
might want to put the U on the road.
It'd be nice. I'd like to
show. Geneva's a very nice place.
They want.
There's Monrovia, Liberia. Very nice place. Just where you should go.
You know, I had some out there. I had a good job in Delegate the other night. It said 70% of more.
How about even places?
No, no, really, seriously, now you need to come to Geneva on the later at this point. I know that I raised it already with you. Some of the states you can assume can't be done because they think we're trying to get rid of you, and it isn't that. But an international conference in America today doesn't get to you know, doesn't mean anything anymore except the U.N. You know, you think it's a big deal. But, I mean, around the country now, you know, the U.N. doesn't make the news anymore. If you put an international, you put that U.N., for example, in London, it's a hell of a big news story. You put it in, I mean, it's like taking the catheter out. I mean, boy, we're real big in Des Moines. We can't be much here. There, you put it around in the other places. Why, it'd be a real big one. Take it to Taiwan. That'd be nice. Don't try it tomorrow.
We have been working on legislation for this time.
to turn it off because it's like the sheep.